When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us every Thursday in the 12 o'clock hour, and we appreciate that, certainly. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. Season's greetings to you and your audience.
Same to you and your family, Rafi. I'm glad we clear that up before we forget, because I think we're both capable of that, right?
At my age, absolutely.
Yeah. Rafi, a lot of talk going on about Operation Sideswipe relative to lawyers being indicted as well. Tell us about it.
Right. So, you know, this is a case, you know, when I come on your show, I'm primarily talking about, you know, the street crime components of what the Metropolitan Crime Commission does, where we document crime trends and talk about the performance of the criminal justice system. But this organization is 72 years old, and we were founded on the principle that crime and corruption are disincentives to growth. So through much of the history of the Crime Commission, we were created in recognition that whistleblowers that have information about corruption are treated very favorably by the system, and the business community wanted to create a conduit where people could report wrongdoing, and that became the genesis of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. That was 1952. And we do work in exposing public corruption. And we cannot be successful in doing that as private citizens without the trust and cooperation of people that give us the tips and the leads that we work up, write reports, and then make referrals to the appropriate agencies. So one such referral that we received was in 2018, when some business people came into our office and laid out for us an astounding fraud scheme where law firms were engaging in recruiting individuals that were staging accidents, causing the accidents, targeting 18-wheelers. Under law, those 18-wheelers have to maintain at least $1 million in insurance. So the scheme that was laid out to us documented the fact that you had the same victims in some of these staged accidents appearing at multiple accident scenes over multiple months. You know, the odds of that happening are remote. And the information that we received, we made a referral in 2018 to the FBI. And in 2020, we saw the first convictions obtained in all of that. So between 2018 and 2019, we saw the first indictments come out in 2019. And since that investigation started, there have been 49 individuals that have already pled guilty to engaging in some of the staged accidents that were documented in Operation Sideswipe, which is the name that the federal government has given this sprawling investigation. And why is this important? Because this fraud scheme directly financially impacts every insured driver in the state of Louisiana that pays inflated insurance premiums. So if anyone's looking at, you know, wondering why their automobile insurance rates are so high in Louisiana, and, you know, New Orleans has, you know, a higher rate of insurance premiums than any other parish in the state of Louisiana, in large part because of this scheme. So literally everybody is impacted by this type of fraud. So the federal government began to peel back the layers of the onion. And the case came to a screeching halt, at least to the public, in September of 2020, when one of the indicted slammers, which is the name that was given to the individual that would orchestrate the staged accident, he would recruit people to be in the car that would claim that the 18-wheeler impacted them, but the reality was that the car was actually causing the accident, not the 18-wheeler. He was the slammer. He was the conduit between the people that were recruited to get in the car, and then he was the conduit that reported and turned over the occupants of the car to the law firms. And the law firms were allegedly involved and were aware that this was a fraudulent scheme and participated in this. So in 2020, we saw Cornelius Garrison, who was one of the slammers involved in this scheme, that according to the federal indictment goes back at least 7 or 8 years prior to the initial indictments in 2019. So this is something that's been happening. Nobody knows how many times it's happened, but it's happened with such great frequency that it is absolutely impacting the insurance premiums in the state of Louisiana. Well, Cornelius Garrison was cooperating with the federal government. And because of his cooperation, the federal government indicted an attorney in 2020, Danny Keating, who pled guilty in 2021. But one day in 2020, after Garrison returned from court to his home, he answered the door in his house and someone murdered him in his doorway. And because he was a cooperating witness, the investigation, the government was relying upon his cooperation, it slowed the investigation down. And it went quiet, at least from the public's perspective, for the better part of 4 years. Until earlier, about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, two individuals were arrested and indicted as slammers that were involved in this scheme, but they were indicted for murdering Cornelius Garrison. So Ryan Harris and his girlfriend Giovanna Carter were indicted for murdering Cornelius Garrison, who was cooperating with the government. His death delayed the investigation and was a setback for the investigation, but the government didn't stop. The FBI continued to work the case. They identified Harris and Carter as the people that were responsible for his murder. They also documented that both of them were involved in the stage accident schemes, and they linked those two people to attorneys. And we don't know what the murdered cooperating witness Cornelius Garrison told the federal government, but the federal government needs proof. And if the person that was providing the proof is no longer living, it explains why the investigation appeared to be stalled for 4 years. So the government finally solved who was responsible for the murdering that federal witness, and they indicted those individuals. And 2 weeks ago, there was a sweeping indictment announced in which two local attorneys and a disbarred attorney were all charged in their role for paying and filing false lawsuits, fraudulent lawsuits, but also included in the government's indictment were allegations of obstruction of justice and witness tampering to keep Garrison and others from cooperating and testifying before the grand jury. The slammers, including Garrison, who is deceased, Harris and others, were the ones who drove the vehicles and intentionally staged the accidents for the attorneys in this case. So it was part of an ongoing conspiracy. So the logjam, the case that had gone quiet, wasn't truly quiet. It was being actively worked, but it took the better part of 3.5 years for the government to release this indictment. And this is a game changer. So normally, you know, you're talking about, and this was initially just a fraud scheme, but this has evolved into a fraud scheme that diverted to a homicide to cover up the fraud that had been going on for the better part of close to a decade. At least that's what the government is alleging. And with that, you're seeing attorneys that have been linked to this. And one of the attorneys is actually a former attorney, Sean Alfordish. He remains in pretrial custody pending a hearing in January. So that would, to me, suggest that Sean Alfordish, a disbarred attorney who is in a relationship with one of the indicted attorneys, Vanessa Mata, who was a stunt woman in Hollywood before she got her law degree, and she was doing, you know, high-speed chases and whatnot. So, again, the government is alleging that Sean Alfordish's fiance, Vanessa Mata, and another attorney by the name of Giles, Justin Giles, with the King Law Firm, were all part of this conspiracy and all engaged in this fraud. And Sean Alfordish is already a convicted felon. In 2011, he had been convicted in rigging his election for the Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association, which is an association in which dues were paid by people in the racing industry. He wanted to be to serve a second term as president of that association because the president controlled the funds that the organization generated. And he ended up pleading guilty and admitting that he rigged his reelection and admitted to diverting funds under the guise of administrative expenses and did 2 years. So now at the government, he realizes that Cornelius Garrison, who was one of the slammers that could identify him, and Mr. Alfordish at least would recognize that if he's charged with another crime, he's going to get much more jail time. And when you're talking about a scheme as broad as this, he is probably, at least I'm sure we're going to find out, but the government is going to allege that he went to the extreme measure of participating and played some role in the murder of a cooperating federal witness to protect and cover up his criminal enterprise. So we'll see how all this plays out, but this is something that has been a massive fraud investigation that, as I said, literally impacts every insured driver in the state of Louisiana. And this thing morphed from just a massive fraud into a homicide and killing a federal witness to continue to obstruct the investigation that apparently he and others were aware were underway. So this is a significant case, and we're going to find out a lot more in the months ahead about it.
Do you get the sense that it ends here? Or are there more?
No, I think that they're still peeling back the layers of an onion. So, as I pointed out a couple of months ago, you had one of the slammers arrested and his girlfriend. His girlfriend has already pled guilty. And she is I would suspect, is probably now a cooperating federal witness in all of this. I believe that her testimony and the information that she supplied was helpful in the most recent round of indictments. But now, as the scheme has been exposed, I think that there are other potential witnesses that have been identified and spoken to. In fact, in the indictment itself, it references a number of other attorneys, not by name, but by letters of the alphabet, which to me may suggest that they may be, since they've been identified, they may be providing information to the government that may result in additional indictments going forward.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think you would agree, one of the bigger cases of this nature, at least since I've been around, right?
I mean, no, I mean, it's already yielded, you know, 50 convictions. 50 people have pled guilty in this already.
Yeah.
And we're just getting to the attorneys right now. So, yes, yeah. This is massive, and it's probably going to be even bigger before it's all said and done.
Interesting text says, why is the King Law Firm still being allowed to advertise on TV if they were connected to this stage accident? Well, they're innocent until proven guilty. They got to go to trial, right?
Exactly. Due process. Right.
Due process.
Right.
All right. We got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about near year-end crime trends and how they relate to the jail inmate populations when we return. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, let's talk about near year-end crime trends, how they relate to the jail inmate population. I was looking at some of the numbers of the inmate population. They're staggering, quite frankly. And without more throughput, this is going to be a problem. I mean, if you think about this, NOPD resolved three very difficult homicide cases, I think, this week alone, and made arrests in them, you know, and so their clearance rate on homicides is improved substantially. That just exacerbates the jail problem.
Exactly. So, you know, I wanted to talk about this because this may be the last time before the new year that we're going to be able to update and put a, you know, a bow around what the crime trends are. And we'll issue a year-end report early in January documenting everything. But, you know, one of the regular topics we talk about is the crime rate here. And, you know, I come on from week to week and month to month and track the progress. And really, it's been very, very impactful to look at the work, and gratifying to me to see the good work that's being done by the NOPD and the Louisiana State Police. So they, law enforcement, have the unenviable task of policing what has been, you know, one of the more violent cities or in one of the more violent stretches in the history of the city of New Orleans over the last couple of years. And during the, you know, during that challenge, you know, not only was crime going up, but the numbers of officers were going down, and the police department was struggling to keep up with the crime rate. And what we have documented and spoken about previously is in the last quarter of 2022, the police department decided to take a different approach, realizing that they weren't going to be able to police the city with 1,250 officers because they no longer had 1,250 officers. The last time we had 1,250 officers was at the end of 2019. And in 2020, and every year since, we've lost more officers than we've hired. And despite the fact that as we speak today, we're probably closer to 800 officers than we are to 900, you're seeing the police department do amazing work in solving these crimes and arresting people. And those arrests are being reflected in the jail population. So when someone is arrested for a crime, police department generates a report, submits that report to the district attorney's office, and the offender is booked into the jail. And when that offender is booked into the jail, they get a bail hearing. And when that hearing, it's an adversarial hearing, prosecution presents the information to the court, to the judge, advising them of the offense for which the individual was arrested, as well as the offender's prior criminal history. And then the judge sets bail. And if the offender cannot post bail, the offenders remain in pretrial custody. So as we've seen crime go down, we've seen the numbers of arrests go up, particularly for felony crimes of violence. So the police department have to ration their resources. And the way that they ration it is they prioritize, you know, their available resources to be the most impactful, which means that they're prioritizing violent crime. And how do we know that they're doing that? Is because the violent crime rate has been going down in every category. So far this year, homicides are down 35% this year than what they were last year at this same point in time. Non-fatal shootings are down 40%. Armed robbery is down 30% this year versus last year. And carjackings are down 40%. And those numbers are confirmed when you look at the inmate population in the jail, where you see the 1,497 inmates that remain in pretrial custody, 60% of those inmates are in custody for felony crimes of violence. There are 235 people in pretrial custody in Orleans Parish waiting to be tried on homicide charges. Another 77 for attempted murder, another 70 on rape and sex crimes, another 165 on robbery charges, 156 on domestic violence felonies, and 138 on aggravated battery, aggravated assault charges, another 119 on felony weapons charges. So you're looking at 68% of the inmate population are in custody either for felony crimes of violence or felony weapons offenses. The fact that those people are behind bars means that they're not out on the street, which also corroborates the information that we've been presenting. Violent crime is down because the offenders have been quickly identified, arrested, and they're being held accountable. The problem is that as they get arrested, those individuals are not progressing through the criminal justice system the way that they should. And part of the reason for this backlog goes back to 2020 during COVID. That was the first year of COVID. So the courts were closed in 2020 and through most of 2021. They didn't begin to reopen until 2022. So you have a 2 year worth of backlog. So one of the things that we've done, and we're releasing it today on your show, we're releasing the inmate population snapshot that I'm in the process of explaining right now. It's going to be on our website, metrocrime.org. And not only are we documenting what the inmate population is in custody for, but we're talking about the average days in custody those inmates have been in the jail. So to put that in some context, I talked to you a moment ago about 235 individuals being held on homicide charges in the Orleans Parish prison. They have been in pretrial custody for an average of 625 days, which is 20 months, meaning that 50% of the homicide people have been in custody for longer than 20 months. So that's 235 cases where people are being charged with either first-degree murder, second-degree murder, or manslaughter. And those individuals, if they're not in custody, they're on the streets, and our crime rate is going to be higher because they're on the streets. But there's a real cost in doing it, not just in delaying justice, and that is, you know, the primary concern, holding people accountable. But there's a tremendous financial cost associated with this backlog, too. So what happens is when someone is booked into the jail, they're booked into the jail by the arresting agency. In Orleans Parish, it's not the Orleans Parish Sheriff that books people into the jail. It's going to be the NOPD and then, to a lesser extent, the Louisiana State Police. So the sheriff is just the innkeeper, just has to house the inmates that are presented to them. But, you know, the jail is under a consent decree. There's a shortage of sheriff deputies that want to work in that jail. And the offenders that are there, as I pointed out, 68% of those offenders are in there for felony crimes of violence or felony weapons offenses. If they encounter each other on the streets, it's usually going to be a crime of violence. Now they're in the same facility, shoulder to shoulder. So it requires, you know, highly trained guards to prevent violence from erupting within in that facility. And when the rest of the system is backed up, it creates tremendous burden to be able to operate that jail in a safely manner. And it's also costing taxpayers substantial sums of money as these cases are lingering in court for years without resolution, because the city pays for the inmates that are housed in the jail until they're convicted. If they're convicted, they get sent to the Department of Corrections, and the state assumes the financial responsibility of housing these individuals. I would say that when you're dealing with felony crimes of violence and you're looking at almost 900 people being held for just felony crimes of violence alone, most of those people are going to be facing substantial jail time. If those cases cannot proceed through the courts, they sit there, and that's what's happening. And that's what we've documented in this report that's available on our website today. And it is creating a tremendous problem. And what's the solution to this? Well, the back end of the system needs to do as good a job and be as efficient, as effective as the front side of the system is. We know we've been talking about the improvements in efficiency and effectiveness of the police department and now the Louisiana State Police, but we haven't really talked about, and the public is unaware of what happens on the back end. They just want to see, are the people that committed the crimes being arrested? The answer is yes. But what the people that have been arrested haven't been held accountable. The job isn't over until they're convicted. And those individuals that are being held on pretrial custody, most of them are in fact guilty. Some of them are not. So the people that are not guilty are sitting in jail, you know, because the system is not effectively and efficiently processing their cases and moving their cases and delivering justice. The people that are guilty, you know, the taxpayers are paying for them to be housed in that jail, and victims and witnesses are looking for closure, and that closure has been being denied because of the backlog in the system. It means the district attorney's office, the judges, the public defender's office, the private criminal defense bar all need to examine what they're doing and figure out what can be done to rectify this problem, because we're not going to fix this thing by what we've been doing post-COVID. You know, the numbers are too large. It's going to require something extraordinary to address this backlog. We'll be issuing a report in the new year that will, you know, not only talk about these problems in greater detail, but we'll also propose some solutions that we're recommending be considered to be implemented to rectify and correct this backlog that is of staggering proportions, that is adversely impacting public safety and the criminal justice system in New Orleans.
I get the sense, Rafi, that in 2025 is going to be a real defining moment for the system. As the efficiency of the and effectiveness of the NOPD in closing cases, making arrests, increases, especially for violent felonies, what you're going to see is, and what I think is already reflected in the jail population, is that we're not able to really address business burglars and residential burglars. You know, business burglaries, there were 389 of those in 2024, and there were 554 residential burglars here. And when you look on these charts in property felonies, you have 159 in jail at the present time. I think you're going to start seeing releases. When you look at auto theft, there's 3,400 auto thefts and 2,200 vehicle burglaries. Those crimes will not be addressed at all with incarceration, because there's just not going to be the capacity if we don't increase the throughput. So when we come back, let's talk about what has to happen here in order to get us into a position that we're going to be able to incarcerate those chronic property offenders that are out there that are wreaking havoc on the streets of the city. And this is not unique to New Orleans. I mean, this is across the country. In fact, retail theft surged 93% right in this year as opposed to the year before COVID. And retailers are really upset, and it's really having a significant impact. We'll be right back with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President of Metropolitan Crime Commission. I just want to remind folks that these are all pretrial detainees that we've been talking about in the jail. They've yet to go to trial, and that is part of the issue. So how do we correct this, Rafi?
Well, the first thing is, you know, somebody, and that's the role of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, somebody needs to frame the issue. That's what we're doing with this research, because if we don't put this information out there, you know, you're going to have, you know, the rest of the criminal justice system just operating in their silos, trying to manage their workload, not really looking at how it's impacting the other components of the criminal justice system. So the system is only as strong as its weakest components. And what we've identified, and we've been talking about for several years, problems with the police department and street crime. Well, now that the New Orleans Police Department and Louisiana State Police are being much more effective in their role in combating crime in the city and holding people accountable, clearing investigations by arrest, what we're seeing is the back end of the system also needs some attention. Part of the problem that you have is that, you know, as I pointed out, the system was shut down for 2 years, and nothing has been done to work their way through that backlog of cases. You know, we talk about the dwindling numbers of police officers available. Well, the same thing applies to sheriff deputies that work in the jail and prosecutors that work for the district attorney's office and now the attorney general's office. The attorney general's office is important because in New Orleans, because of the agreement that was executed between the attorney general and the district attorney's office, the attorney general's office is now prosecuting all of the arrests that are made by the Louisiana State Police. So you have two prosecutor's offices that are, you know, understaffed, that are dealing with the workload that's being added to them by, you know, a more effective and efficient law enforcement community. We're seeing cases solved now because of technology and science, no longer just, you know, eyewitnesses. Most of these cases are solved because of the technology, cameras, forensics, you know, opening up cell phones, getting warrants to open up cell phones. So what law enforcement is doing is akin to what you see on all the crime shows on TV now. That's happening every day all over this city, all over this region by law enforcement. And that means that the evidence is stronger, but when you have a backlog of cases that have been sitting there because of COVID, it means that the system is not really properly being utilized to work their way through that backlog. So I think what's going to have to happen is that the district attorney's office is going to need, and the attorney general's office are going to have to take a look at these numbers. These numbers that we're putting out there, if it isn't measured, it can't be managed. And what we're doing is we're putting the numbers out there and hoping and trying to force the rest of the system to better manage this workload. Now, there's going to be a bunch of different ways that we can fix this thing. I have some ideas. Like I said, I want to wait until we come out with our report early in the new year, documenting the scope and the breadth of all of this. And when I come out with that, I want to share that report with our criminal justice leadership to see if we can put together a plan to work our way through this backlog. It's not a question of if, we have to do it. Because if these individuals that are in pretrial custody are released back into the streets, it places the public's safety at risk and puts more burden on an already understaffed law enforcement presence in this community. So it's critically important to identify the problem. We've identified it. We're going to be talking about some potential solutions going forward, but it's going to be incumbent upon the rest of the system to provide the resources and work in cooperation with each other to rectify this problem. No one entity can fix it by themselves without the cooperation, coordination, and communication that's necessary with all the various components of the criminal justice system.
We need judges to work harder. We need more DAs. They need to move more cases. We need more throughput, because the moment in time that you cannot selectively incapacitate the impact criminal any longer, crime's going back up. It's guaranteed. It's just it's an happenstance, and it doesn't matter how effective and efficient the NOPD becomes. And actually, the more they do, the worse the issue, the worse the problem is, and the harder it is to solve it. So right. They have to be in lockstep with the improvements in efficiency and effectiveness of the NOPD. Has to be matched by the remaining players in the criminal justice system, or the whole equation gets upside down. plain and simple.
Exactly.
We've seen it happen in a lot of jurisdictions, and this one's not going to be any different. You know, and it's going to be interesting to see who's going to step up, quite frankly.
They all have to step up. Yep. It's not a question of a choice. That they have to. It's their responsibility. They took an oath of office to perform the functions of their office, and they're not doing it, and we need to figure a way to make it happen. I think, you know, the DA, the Attorney General's office, the courts, most of them are all willing to begin to address the issues that we'll frame. Not everyone, yep. and the ones that don't, we'll be talking about them some more in the weeks ahead.
You look at the homicide number of inmates alone, 235, and they've been in custody for a total of 146,773 days. Rafi, thank you so much for joining us. Got to get to a break. We really appreciate it. Have a great holiday season. We'll be right back.